And you know how much was the compromise? They were people, if they are not Christians, they don't get promoted. So some of them become Christians, not because they were to accept Christ, but just as a religion. And the Bible records history in the time of Constantine when they all had to be baptized. And you know, they just sort of spray water on them and say, alright, you're not Christians. All kinds of people came into the church that were not really born again, the followers of Christ. So the church went into the compromising church. Church of compromise. Then from a church of compromise, it moved into the Thyatira church in verse 18, the corrupt church. And all kinds of wrong teaching, all kinds of things came into the church. The church was so corrupted that in those days, by that time they had a pope system and all those things. And some of the popes were actually, you know, having illegitimate children. They even have a lady pope once, and all kinds of things. It became like political position. The official church became corrupted. It was so corrupted that they even lost the Bible. The whole basis of Christianity was lost. Nobody followed the Bible anymore. In fact, the Bible became in a language that nobody reads. The common people don't read anymore. So we went into that period of corruption. And as corruption precedes corruption and it breeds on, the church enters the dark ages. That is chapter 3, verse 1, the dead church. Now you can trace these movements in the church, in church history. Now overall, remember, overall there is always a remnant. There are people and Christians in all these movements or the general things that were happening that God knew was going to happen. God predicted that it was going to happen in Revelation. But there were Christians who stood true to them. All true. And they have their rewards. There's always a true breed that goes right through. But in general, there was a timing that the church went through different things. And God put it in the Bible in Revelation to show us that He knew what was to happen. He said, don't panic, don't panic. Right? Sounds like this guy in Death's Army. Some of you know Death's Army, right? I think he was a sergeant, wasn't he? So every time something happens, Captain Mandarin! He says, and he's the first one to say, don't panic! Don't panic! Everyone, don't panic! And he was the one who panicked some more. So when all those things happen, don't panic. God knows about it. But we are one dot in the bigger picture. God allowing the phases to go through. It went into the dead church. At that time, the church lost everything. It was no more even the church. In the true sense of Christianity and spirituality. Lost the Bible. Everything was dark. And at the same time in history, it was the dark ages. Dead church, dark ages. But slowly, in the 1500s, the Reformation started. In chapter 3, verse 7, the Philadelphia church. Do you notice Christianity started reviving from the Reformation? And even pre-Martin Luther, there were a few people like Givonarola, Savonarola or something. He was among the first to preach salvation by grace. And God used these people. And Martin Luther was more famous than all the rest of them, but there was a whole bunch of them. And the Reformation started. And we all know, churches, study your church history, the Reformation. So the Reformation brought one thing after another. So there was the Reformation period, Martin Luther. Later there was the great first great awakening under John Wesley and Charles Wesley and George Whitefield. And then later there was the second great awakening under Charles G. Finney. And on, we have been having revival after revivals in the church. A bigger move than we realize. Then in the early 1900s, we have the Pentecostal revival in Azusa Street. And it continued on and on. And even in the last decade, there are certain things that you could see God's pattern working. You notice that the charismatic revival was a full restoration of the Spirit to all the various churches who were evangelical. Right, there was a Pentecostal, then there was a charismatic move and wave that touched many of us, you and I. I was a Baptist that was touched by the charismatic move of God in the 1960s. And so, all of us are touched by God, by the move, the bigger move of God that caught us in His wave. And then we realize, when you look back, the 1950s was a decade of the evangelists. The 1960s was a decade of the pastors. The 1970s, with great teachers rise, there was a decade of the teachers. 1980s was a decade of the prophets. The 1990s was a decade of the apostles. And then you reach 2000 AD. So I have brought you right up to speed. What's the next decade? Some things are coming up. And as I have said, and I say it again in the Spirit of God, at the beginning of every century, since the 1500s, there's always been a great wave. And a great wave is about to happen. When I say about to happen, I may not mean tomorrow. Some of you, your thinking still need to be straightened out, right? When you say, you know, you got to wait long on the Lord, and your thinking is 7 days. Excuse me. Excuse me. Moses, 40 years. David had to wait quite a number of years, 13 years. Joseph, 13 years. So I would say, at the minimum, we are measuring in years. Right? Take off the second hand, take off the minute hand, take off the hour hand, throw away the clock. And just use your calendar. When you talk about timing, right? So, but one thing, just to encourage you, right? I don't know. So go on this side, and then at the end of the sermon, all of you go out with long faces. Oh my God, the pastor just told me I'm going to wait another 40 years. What am I going to do for 40 years? Hold on, that's only half the sermon. That's the other half. I'll tell you what to do in the 40 years. So we have the church, like the world, has moved at some point, I believe in the 20th century. The church moved together with the scientific technological revolution. In the 20th century, man has advanced more than any other century. Technologically, luxuriously. I mean, some of the things that you take for granted. Toilets, systems, air conditioning, heating, all those things in the last 100 years. Do you realize that even the ability to fly machines is not a very old technology? It's only about 100 odd years from the Wright brothers who flew a plane for a few minutes and said, that's it, to space flight. Think about it. Somewhere in the 20th century, I believe, at the beginning of the 20th century, we move into the Laodicean age. When consumerism, when wealth, humanism, and all this prospered, the Communist Revolution, 1917, and all these different kinds of philosophies that emphasize the things of this life as the end to all things. The church also moved into that period. We are in the Laodicean age, but doesn't mean that you and I have to be a Laodicean. It just tells us what we are facing. And we just need to walk carefully. Which is why I'm surprised. Right? If we are in the Laodicean age, why are we teaching people that wealth is the end all and be all? Shouldn't it be that in the Laodicean age, that that's the time to warn people the dangers of wealth? They can acquire it. God gave us the power to acquire wealth. But to at the same time realize that this is the age when this can suck you in the wrong area, like thorns that take away the prosperity of God's true word in your life. And so we are in that period, and we don't have control of those areas. Those are bigger than us. We are just one sentence in God's big diary. And it's measured in years, decades. Some of them 100 years. Although I don't think we have that long to go before His coming, as a prophecy brought forth. Let's realize that there is this flow that is going on in God. God's big time scale. And we have to flow with God's time scale. There are some things that God reveals only when He comes to a page in His diary. Let me give an example here. In Deuteronomy chapter 12. And this is during the time of Moses. The Israelites do not have their own nation yet. They are still with Moses. And Deuteronomy is before they enter into the promised land. So Deuteronomy is a series of messages given by Moses at the end of their 40-year wilderness period. And God told them something in Deuteronomy chapter 12. He says here, if you look, your Bible have a little subtitle, the whole chapter is called A Place of Worship. And God said to them in verse 5, but you shall seek the place. Now, they haven't even got into the land and God really start talking about this. You shall seek the place where the Lord your God chooses out of all your tribes to put his name for His dwelling place, and there you shall go. So God says in the promised land that they were about to go in, they haven't gone in yet, I'm going to choose a place where you are to build my temple. And God refused to reveal it early. After Deuteronomy, you have the time of Joshua. After Joshua, you have the time of the judges, which lasted many, many years. And under the time of judges, you have the last judge and great judge, who was both a prophet and a priest, Samuel. The last of the judges. And notice that when it came to the last period of the judges, Joshua was more moving with Moses' anointing. He was like a pioneer like Moses. So he led the people into the promised land. In Joshua's days, all the people obeyed God. When Joshua died, look at the book of Judges. The people went all over the place until a leader came. And when a leader came, they called the leader a judge. And as long as they were under a good leader, the people served God. When the leader died, they went astray again. There was an up and down thing in the book of Judges, which lasted for a long, long time. Measured in 100 years kind of thing. And at the time of that period, the last great judge was Samuel. And Samuel started from small. And God used him because his mother's prayers were all bred into him. And when Samuel was about to go to die, towards Samuel's last days, and in Samuel's days, there was suddenly a desire among the people for a king. Now notice, the desire for a king was out of time and for the wrong motive. Do you notice that you can desire the right thing for the wrong motive? You can desire the right thing for the wrong motive. But God knows what's going on in the heart. They wanted a king, not because it was a pattern that they knew it was time for God to move into the kingdom. You notice that the Israelites moved in a different period. They were in the period of the judges. After Saul and David, they were in the period of kings. Kings led them. They were still prophets, but the kings led them. If they had a bad king, the whole thing goes down. If they're a good king, the whole thing goes up. And in God's grace, when they have a very bad king, He raised a very powerful prophet to keep God's people on track, like Elijah. So they move into the period of kingship. What happens if we live under that kind of umbrella? Be faithful to whatever you have. And there's nothing you can do to change the bigger picture because we are only one page in the diary. One little line in the diary. But you learn how to flow with where you live in. and learn to be faithful. No matter what age or what circumstances, what dispensation or what kind of overall dispensation we are in,